I Was a White Knight Once. Chapter 1. A Moment in My Mother's Shoes. I was born in November 1969. Madison, Wisconsin is still a very progressive city, but back then it was defined by outright revolution. Psychologists will argue until blue in the face over what influence atmosphere has on an infant, so I will simply note that for the first 2 years of my life, I was surrounded by a turmoil I do not remember. Whether or not it affected who I am today, I cannot determine, but the possibility exists that my personality was in part shaped by the chaos that surrounded me at that time. The Vietnam War had college students protesting as loudly as possible, and the University of Wisconsin was a hotbed for revolutionaries. With every demonstration came the hint of violence, and on the occasion police became involved, a riot would ensue. My mother recalls a time when I was 9 months old. It was early August, and she was searching for a new apartment. She and my father were students, her 22 years old and him 6 years above that. They had been doing well enough in their one-bedroom dwelling when an accident came along in the form of a very time-demanding creature, me. Both my mother and father tell the same story of their nuptials. My mom was very young, and being from a small town, thought being married was a woman's life ambition. So she pushed, he relented, and before either could see the error of their ways, I arrived and solidified the mistake of it all. A bright red cherry sitting atop their Sunday of failure. My entrance to the world signified the need to shuffle into a two-bedroom residence. While Dad spent every waking hour studying for his PhD or working at the university bookstore, Mom carried me around with her, including during one memorable trip to university housing. After searching student listings and filling out applications, we left the building and stepped into a full-blown melee. It had popped up out of nowhere, as happened often in Madison at the time. The car was 2 blocks away, so my mom had to carry me past riot police shooting tear gas, anarchists lighting fires, and through a mob of people she feared would knock her over and trample me. Though I have never experienced such a fear, I can imagine holding your infant child to your chest in a moment of uncertainty ranks up there with the deepest of dark thoughts. That my mom could have turned around and gone back inside the building until all had ended is a thought, but back then there was no way of measuring how long an upheaval would last. Students were continually being beaten, and Madison was constantly making the national news for incidents of police on student brutality. Over time, you learned to accept what was happening as a facet of life you didn't enjoy, but you dealt with anyway. Instead of hiding, you put your head down and waded forward the best you could. Like everything tolerated, a breaking point was eventually reached. For my mother, that day was August 24th, 1970. At 3:42 a.m., radicals set off a bomb designed to destroy an Army Mathematics Research Center inside Sterling Hall, part of the University of Wisconsin. A van with 2,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate was parked next to the building and detonated. To give perspective, Timothy McVeigh used 5,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate in his attack in Oklahoma City. The bombers failed their intended task. The research center was only mildly damaged. But they did manage to destroy huge portions of Sterling Hall and many buildings surrounding it. They also killed an innocent researcher working in a lab, a man unrelated to the military or anything they had targeted. Until the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, the attack on Sterling Hall stood as the largest act of terrorism ever to take place on American soil. How this relates to my mother is simple. Having finally found a new apartment for us, on that August day at 6 a.m., she began the process of moving the family belongings from home to home. Whether my father was sleeping or already studying is not remembered by either of them, but it is a testament to the strength that is woman that she began to load and unload boxes all on her own, and all the while watching me fuss. We were moving to the lower half of a duplex by Camp Randall, the football stadium. Mom filled our Volkswagen Bug with boxes of belongings and me, her little poop machine. The city was a ghost town in the dawn light as she drove down University Avenue past Sterling Hall. Today, both rapid response teams and the media would have been on the scene at 3:43 a.m., 1 minute after the initial explosion. 24-hour news channels would be broadcasting live, using local remotes to speculate as much as possible and drive up their ratings without offering any facts. In 1970, however, with no internet and only three television stations and little awareness of what a terrorist attack was, my mom drove by a building blocked off by nothing more than yellow police ribbon. There were no crowds, no police, no reporters, just rubble and blown out windows. The big three networks were showing their nightly test patterns or maybe children's programming like Captain Kangaroo. A newspaper reporter might have been busy researching and writing up a story, but such information wouldn't hit the streets for hours and hours. Unable to hit enter and post an immediate story to the internet, reporters had to wait for the presses to be fired up. So back and forth my mother went, from old to new home, filling and emptying the bug with me always in tow. Each time, noticing a little more of the devastation as she drove by Sterling Hall. While her initial thought was that a gas leak or something similar was responsible, soon more negative thoughts entered her mind. Every time my mother passed the building, the debris looked more ominous. Several hours later, a news report finally confirmed a bombing directly related to war protesters had caused the damage, not an innocuous gas main. That, as said, was the final straw. The event set the wheels in her mind moving. It was time to leave Madison and the unstable nature the city existed in. Before I was born, staying might have been acceptable. My mother was open-minded and forward-thinking, and in 1967, lingered at a gathering to listen to speakers protesting Dow Chemical. She only remained a moment, and upon returning home, discovered the police stepped in after she left. Everything had turned violent, and students were beaten and tear-gassed. 74 people were injured, and the incident is still noted today as one of the most violent clashes of the era. Sadly, Kent State would take the title Most Tragic in 1970. The moments that lend themselves to the thought, that could have been me, always give one pause, and doubly so in times of tragedy. When you're alone in the world, you can brush almost anything off. You get into a car accident and laugh. Or maybe you hear a mortar round land 200 yards from where you were sleeping, and you give a sort of confused dog head cock in wonder more than fear. My mother lived inside a city torn between authoritarian rule and angry youth for many years before I came along, and she did so without much concern. After she had a child, she started to notice the darker sides of life. Now that she had someone she was responsible for, many things in Madison looked a little more murky and a lot more unsafe. Not that every day held the promise of protest, and not that the violence was citywide or invading every neighborhood, but as the possibility always existed and the campus held attention ready to pop, that was enough for my young mother to reevaluate her living situation. It would take her one more year to get me out. She and my father both needed to finish school so they would be employable after escaping. But when she finally could, Mom took the family as far away from the age of protest as possible and into the middle of Wisconsin farmland.